But if you've been here for the last 2 weeks, you know that we're going through a series called I Love Sundays since we did our launch on September 20th, our kind of back-to-church launch. We've been following this series called I Love Sundays. And if you haven't been here for the last 2 weeks, I am happy to say, but also tentative or nervous to say, you can now find these sermons online on our website. So whether that's good or bad, I'm not sure yet. But if you missed it, you can go online now to the webpage, and there's a sermons tab, and you can catch the last 2 weeks of this series. But last week, we talked about how better Sundays make better Mondays. And we looked at Isaiah 58, 13, and 14. And if you look on the screen, you'll see the passage, Isaiah 58. There we go. And we said that it was an if-then statement, right? It had this... The first part in verse 13, it said, if you call the Sabbath a delight, and it goes on through the rest of the verse about if you don't do your own things, if you don't succumb to your own desires, if you don't follow your own ways, but you call the Sabbath a delight, it says then in verse 14, then I will have you rise up. Maybe. It was the if then. So the next slide should be verse 14 where it should say then. I will raise you up. There we go. Then you will find your joy in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride triumphant through the land. That is my fault on the eights of the land. That's wrong. So, but we talked about how better Sundays make better Mondays. So if you're calling the Sabbath holy, if you're choosing for it to be a delight for you, then your Mondays will be better. If you start your week off right, then you're going to set yourself up right for a better week. And clearly, I need a better proofreader and not myself. Because that's not good. Ecclesiastes 3, the next slide should be Ecclesiastes 3. Let's see if I got this one wrong, too. It says, there is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. So for everything, there is a season. For everything, there's a purpose. There's a place. As parents, sometimes you say to the kids, you know, now's not the time for that. Like, when we get home, we'll talk about this later. It's that same idea, that for everything, there's a time and a place. And for us as Christians, Sunday, there's a specific thing for Sunday. And we've been talking about this over the last couple weeks, that Sunday is a time for us to just kind of rest and relax and slow down and be able to catch up from this past week. We said in Mark 2:27, the next one, that the Sabbath was designed for man and not man for the Sabbath, right? So it's this idea that we weren't made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was specifically made for us. That God created everything in the world in 6 days, and then on the seventh, he rested. God didn't need to rest. God didn't need to slow down. He's God. He doesn't have to. But he set the example for us that work for 6 days, and then on the seventh day, you take a whole day and you rest, and you give back to God. And we've talked about the need we have, especially in today's culture. You know, it's more and more prevalent that kids are involved in things all through the weekend, Saturdays and Sundays, sports, drama, music, whatever it may be. Parents, sometimes maybe we work an extra job or you picked up another shift because weekends pay better because they're weekends. And we've kind of lost this mindset over the years about the importance of what a Sunday is. And last week we talked about that. But this week, I want to talk about how better Sundays can make better families. And if you don't have kids or if you don't have families, it still will apply to you. Because no matter what, everyone in here is an example to someone else. Even if you're young, even if you're a teenager, you're still an example to someone else. You can still set a lifestyle and you can still follow some of these principles we're going to look at and set the example for your friends. So just because you're young, don't think this doesn't apply to you. Today's passage that I want to look at is Proverbs 22, verse 6. And this is a verse I heard a lot growing up. And this one verse is going to be probably the most important verse that could have been given as far as a command that was given to us, something that we were told to do. This was a proverb that was composed by Solomon, who was supposed to be the wisest man who ever lived. If you know the story of Solomon, he prays for wisdom, and he becomes this very knowledgeable and wise man. And in Proverbs 22:6, he writes this. He says, train up a child in the way you should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Train up a child in the way you should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. If we break this down into two parts, we first see that there's a command that's given. The very first part of that, right? Train up a child. So we're commanded to be training our children, right? So we're commanded to train our children. And the second part is the end result. If we've trained them up in a certain way, when he grows old, he will not depart from it, right? Before we get to that first point, in the army or in the military period, we have what's called land navigation, so land nav. And we learn how to take a map and take a compass, and you're given a grid coordinate. And then you find that grid coordinate, and you plot your point, and then you figure out where you are, and then you figure out how do I get from where I am to where I'm going. And it requires you to know how to use a compass, but it also requires an important step, and that's converting grid north to magnetic north. So on your chart or on your map, you'll see a line that has a G and a line that has an M, and they'll be slightly off from each other. Because when you have a map, the direction that you're going to have on the map won't directly translate to the Earth, because the Earth, we have a different north. So we have the grid north, and we have the actual magnetic north of what our Earth is, right? So you have to make sure that you either add or subtract, depending on which side it's on, to where you need to go. So if I need to go 180 degrees, and I need to go this way, you know, for 1,000 kilometers, but I don't convert it correctly because I wasn't trained properly, if I'm going 1,000 kilometers in this direction and I'm off by 2 degrees, by the time I get to the end, I could be in a completely different country. And that's by just being off by a couple degrees because I wasn't properly trained in how to use my map and compass, right? It's the same concept with our children. Train up your children in the way you should go, and when they are old, they will not depart from it. If we're not training our children properly, what they've experienced now growing up is now how they're going to live out their life. So here's where we come in with the Oregon shootings, or where we come in with any of the shootings over the last decade. What were the influences on that young man growing up? What kind of example did he have that was set by his parents? And this is all kind of stuff that will unfold as they continue the investigation, as they look into it. But what were his influences at school? Who were his friends at school? What was he watching on TV? What was he reading on the internet? All these things are things that are being put into our kids' minds, and we start to create our ideas or our actions based on these different things that we pick up. So there's a huge command that's set here for us, especially as Christians, to make sure that we're training our children properly, because when they're old, those habits that they've picked up at a young age will be how they live the rest of their life. So the direction you start your children, for the most part, will determine their destination. So there's 7 things I want to look at briefly this morning as we roll through them. And the first one you saw was put God first. To put God first. These are examples that parents, you need to set for your kids. But kids, you also need to set for your friends. And if you're in here and you don't have kids, if you have nieces, if you have nephews, if you have friends, it's still an example that we need to set. If you're a teacher, it doesn't matter. All of us need to live by these principles. They apply to all of us. But the first is to put God first. If you ever heard the phrase, first things first, it's this idea of everything has an order and everything has a specific event to it. And if you look at Matthew 6:33, you're going to see that it says, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you. Jesus is talking, he's giving the sermon, and he says, seek first the kingdom and his righteousness. So if your first goal is to be seeking the kingdom of God and to be seeking his righteousness, all the rest of the things, he said, will be added to you. Now, it doesn't mean that you're going to be automatically blessed with riches, the best cars, but it's all the things that you need, right? We've talked about this before, that all the things that you need for your life, for the call that God has on you, he'll provide. If you're seeking his kingdom first, if you're putting him first in everything you do, he'll make the rest happen. Right? There's an old song, his eye is on the sparrow. His eye is on the sparrow, and I know he watches me. If God cares about a sparrow, about this small little bird, how much more does he care about you and me, his sons and daughters, right? So if we're putting God first, The rest will fall into line. It's kind of like when you're on an airplane and the flight attendants are doing those safety instructions, and they have the CD playing, and they have the seatbelts, and then they grab the oxygen mask. And there's an important thing they say with the oxygen mask. What do they say? They say, put yours on first, right? They tell you to put yours on first. And that, I mean, to me, that's kind of like, well, if I have my wife, I want to make sure my wife is, you know, situated with her oxygen mask. And I want to make sure, you know, my friends maybe, that they got theirs on, right? Because I worry about other people. But what good are you to any of them if you don't get your mask on and you don't survive? So they're saying, make sure you put yours on first, because if you don't put yours on first, you're going to be useless. So the idea of, if we're not putting God first, if we're not setting this example of God first to our children or to our friends, then what does the rest of it matter that we say to them? Because it's not holding the weight that we're saying. So the first thing we need to do is make sure that we put God first. The second one I want to look at is, let your kids see your relationship with God. Let your kids see your relationship with God. Deuteronomy 6, verses 6 to 9 says this: these commandments that I give to you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. This idea of how important the commandments were that were given to them. Impress them on your children. So Moses and the people were entering the promised land, and this was the instruction they were given on how to pass on their faith, right? So verbally, tell your kids, show them. Even to the point that if you go to Israel now and you look at some of the homes, you'll see these little boxes that are tacked onto door frames. And in these boxes, it's the Jewish custom that they have scriptures in the boxes, literally nailed to the door frame. Because it says, write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. So that when you enter in, as you're coming to their house, you see the scriptures right there. Because that's how important it was to them. Of all the people in Moses' time, you had the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, Jebusites, Amalekites, and all the Ites, right? And the list goes on. And you have all these nations. But how many of them, if you don't read the Bible, have you ever heard of outside of a history class? The Israelites, right? The Israelites is the only one that you guys really would know of, unless you've sat there and you've studied the Bible for a long period of time and you've read about all these nations, or you've gone through an in-depth history class where they've talked about all the different, you know, genres, all the different nations, all the different time periods, all the different things that they had. Because the Israelites sat and they passed down their faith from generation to generation. They impressed upon their kids how important their relationship with God was and how important their beliefs were. We also know that it helped that God said that the Israelites were his chosen people. So God is going to make sure that that nation survives. But they took that seriously. When I was growing up, we used to have family devotions. We used to talk about what we learned at church. We used to discuss things that we had heard. And my parents made very clear their faith to me growing up. They made very clear their ideas and their thoughts and what they believed. And that was passed down to me and my sister. I don't know why they're laughing. But they let their relationship be made known, right? There's other things that I picked up from the two of them that maybe they would like to not have passed on. But it's because our kids are watching us, right? Parents, it's so important. Your kids are watching you. Your kids are learning about you. And what they learn from you is going to be things they apply to their lives. When I forwarded this outline off to Paola and asked her to translate it, I sent her the next point, and she sent back kind of a question. And the third one I want to look at is, let your kids see your spending. And I had let it go just like that. And Paola texts me, and she goes, let your kids see your spending with time with God, right? I was like, no, it's let your kids see your spending. And she goes, oh, maybe I don't want them to see my spending. But bear with me for a second. So number three is let your kids see your spending, right? And it's not spending time with God. It's not your spending time with people. It's literally your funds. Let your kids see your spending. My mother impressed upon me and upon her home ec groups and any kids that she taught this idea of a budget. And this budget was take all of the money that you have, all of your income, and we're going to write it down. What's your total number? Now we're going to find out, where are you spending all of this money? Are you spending it on things that matter? Or are you spending it on things that are frivolous? But we're going to break it down, and we're going to show you. And she would show me what their budget was. And she would show us, this is, you know, what we pay for car insurance. This is what we pay for groceries. This is what we pay for property taxes, for the garbage collection, for the heating, for the to put this mindset that there's a sense of responsibility that's important. That kids, you may not see it now, and what money you have now, you may just blow on the newest, latest trend. But when you become an adult, when things start to matter, your money becomes very different. And when you get an apartment and now you have to do a budget and you're trying to figure out with your wife, where are we sending all of our money? It's important to sit down and get this idea of a budget. Where are we spending our money? Because what are we spending it on? As soon as you sit down and you show them your spending or you look at your own spending, how many of us look at what we spend and go, why did I do that? You know, why did I really spend that on that? I didn't need that. I don't use that. That was worthless. So let your kids see your spending. Luke 6, verse 40, it says this. It says, the student is not above the teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like their teacher. This idea that the old, you know, Chinese proverb or whatever, the student has become the master, right? This concept of as you teach your kids will eventually become fully trained. They'll eventually start to act on their own, or they'll be able to survive on their own. And I think every parent in here would agree that someday you want your kids out of the house. You want them on their own. But in order for them to be on their own, they need to know how to survive on their own. So let your kids see your spending. Let them see how important it is to know what they're doing with their money. And that ties us into the fourth one, which is let your children tithe. Let your children tithe. Along with the budget system that my mom had, they also had an envelope system that kind of went with it. And in the envelope system, you broke down where you spent all your money. So your bills, groceries, you know, miscellaneous. And then one of the most important envelopes was tithe or church giving, right? And I'll never forget, anytime we ever talked about it, the first thing that she would always say was, the first thing you have to do is make sure you put your tithe first. So whatever you make, whatever income you have, right off the bat, you have to take out your tithe, what you're giving back to God. Because nothing that we have, nothing that any of us own, nothing that any of us have earned is really of our own doing. Because we know that everything comes from God, right? Everything's been given to us by God. So it's important that we put in it a very big emphasis on giving back. Malachi 3:10 says this, and it'll be up there in a second. It says, bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Test me on this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will not be room enough to store it. God says, on this thing, test me. Go ahead, try me. Tithe and watch what happens. Don't tithe and watch what happens. He makes it very clear that it's very important that no matter what we have, no matter how much we earn, big or little, that we make sure our children are learning the concept of tithing, of giving back to God. Because nothing we have, nothing we ever will have, is given to us by our own works. We may physically go to a job, but God's provided that job for us, hasn't he? He's provided us the ability to make the money that we can provide for our families. But we need to make sure that we put an emphasis on tithing. The generations that are coming up are starting to lose that idea. They're starting to just kind of pass past that. They don't see the importance, but it's extremely important because everything we have is from God. The fifth thing I want to look at is serve at church together. Serve at church together. A few years ago, a man named Eric Swanson of Leadership Network published a study about children who grew up in the church and wound up loving God when they were adults. This network study found that these children experienced two things in their families of origin, and the first one is going to apply to this point, and the second one will apply to the next point. And so the first was this: their family served God somewhere together in church. According to Swanson, children whose parents served at church and found ways for their children to serve with them were much more likely to grow up to love God than children who didn't. So for families that found a way to plug into church together, their children were much more likely to grow up and love God and to continue to serve God than children who grew up without ever plugging in. Or children who grew up in families where the families never found a way to plug into church. They never found a way to be a part of what was going on. And there's many different ways to do that. We know in church you have many opportunities. Plugging into Sunday school, sticking around afterwards for Sunday school is a way. But there's different ways to serve. And Don and I have talked a little bit briefly this past week about how do we get people to plug in? How do we get more people to do things around the church? How do we get more people involved in the ministries? Because we are a family here, and we want to do things together, right? Well, part of serving together, or a way to serve together with your children, a great example is the Fall Festival. October 17th, we have a festival coming up. And I'll tell you what, watching what goes on behind the scenes for when you guys show up to the festival and the craziness that ensues beforehand, we could use many more hands. Many hands make light work. You ever heard that phrase? The more people you have, the easier it is to pull something off. So if you're looking for a way to plug in as a family, start with the Fall Festival. Help out. We're going to have a lot of things that need to get done, and it's a great way to plug in. Because now it's an opportunity for you and your children to serve the Lord together. It's an opportunity for both of you to experience a ministry together. And that helps connect the generations and keep them connected with the church. The sixth one is send or take them on a cross-culture mission trip. We haven't gone on a mission trip for a while here with Hideaway. I think the last one we went on as a youth group was when I was in high school. And we went to Mexico. But there's something to be said about going to a different culture. Now, it's going to seem weird because I know we have a lot of different cultures represented here, right? We have people from all over the world. But what we have in America is completely different than what we have in a different country. At Timothy, we used to go to the Dominican Republic. The senior class would take a trip to the Dominican Republic, and we would go out to these villages, and we'd go to the sugarcane villages. And you could see the Dominican Republic, where all the tourists went, and all the shops and the resorts and the pools and, you know, the things that we think about as if, you know, if I was an American and I was going to go on a trip to the Dominican Republic for a vacation, I'd be going towards the resorts, right? But we didn't go there with the school. We never made it that far. Where we would go is to the sugarcane villages, where you have families who literally are building houses out of trees. We called them tree by fours. Instead of two by fours when we were doing construction projects, it was literally trees that they would use to help build the houses. And many of you may be able to relate, you know what I'm talking about. But it's this concept of our kids are growing up in a generation where everything they have around them is almost handed to them. A lot of kids just have things handed to them. When I was growing up, if I wanted an Xbox or a PlayStation, I was told, good luck with that. You can cut the grass, earn an allowance, and get it yourself. Because my parents made me earn those types of things. And for a while, you know, I didn't like it because I don't want to have to go work to get a PlayStation when my cousins have every new video game that comes out, and my friends have every new video game, and I'm now stuck behind. But it impressed the importance of working for it. But then when I got to the Dominican Republic, or when I got to Mexico, or even when I got to a mission trip in Washington State, and saw what the kids didn't have, not what they did have, but what they didn't have. Forget the Xbox, forget the PlayStation, forget the cell phone, forget the iPad. They were looking for food. They were looking for water. They were looking for clothes. They were looking for just stuff to get by, shoes, socks, you know, basic things that we take for granted here. If you ever have an opportunity, if we as a church have an opportunity, or if your kids look for a summer trip, Touch the World International is a great organization I've gone on several trips with. But go on a mission trip. Get outside your comfort zone and go see another culture. And just see what they don't have compared to what you do have. And you'll realize how blessed you are. And the last one, and I think the most important one, is help your children find godly mentors. Help your children find godly mentors. Now, if you don't have kids, if you don't have stuff like that, then you are one of those godly mentors. If you don't have someone to point towards needing a godly mentor, then you yourself need to be that mentor. I was talking to Vanessa the other day. We were hanging out on Tuesday, and we were discussing how children don't like to listen to parents. Parents, how many times do you tell your children something? And they don't want to listen, they don't want to listen, they don't want to listen. But the minute they walk off and they hear someone else say it, whether it's their youth pastor, whether it's a teacher at school, whether it's a friend or a friend's parent, and they say it, and the kids are like, ah. And you turn and go, I've been telling you that for 5 years. For the last 5 years, I've tried to pound this into you, and you will not listen. But as soon as you hear someone else say it, you think it's this fantastic idea, right? And Vanessa was like, I don't get it. I don't understand it. I'll say something, and they won't listen. You'll say the same thing, and they'll be like, oh. So I can relate. I was a child. There were things my parents tried to push into me that I didn't listen to. But then when I heard my youth pastor say it, or I heard a teacher at school say it, I was like, oh, that makes sense. And I'd come home and I'd be like, guess what I learned today? And they'd, really? We've been teaching you that for the last 10 years. Why don't you pay attention? But parents, help your children find godly mentors. Whether it's here at church, I'm not going to tout myself. But we have a youth group here. Get your kids plugged in. I will say something is better than nothing. So I'm not going to say I'm perfect, but I think what we do in youth group is pretty beneficial to the youth that we have here. And the youth may agree or they may not. I don't know. But at least if they're plugged in and if they're studying the word, if they're connected to someone who is focused on the right things, they have a better chance of connecting and learning the things that they need to learn. Godly mentors are extremely important, and unfortunately, they're becoming harder to find because of the culture that we live in. Because people don't want to talk about it anymore. People don't want to impress things like this into their children because they don't want to take responsibility for the actions. We had a shooting this past week where a bunch of people were killed, 9, 10, and maybe as high as 13 now. But who's going to take responsibility for that kid's actions? Part of the responsibility is on him, because he's the one who chose to do it. But what did he learn growing up? Or what did he not learn growing up? Did he have a godly mentor? Did he have someone who was pushing the right things down into him? I would say probably not, especially considering what he did. Sundays are a day, they're an opportunity for you as a family to sit down and be together. They're an opportunity for you to take a break from the week. They're an opportunity for you to discuss what you learned at church or to discuss something that you've been reading in your devotions. there a whole day that you can set aside and you can make sure you're talking about the right things? That your talk isn't empty, that the things you do aren't meaningless, but that the things that you focus on Sunday have eternal value. Proverbs 22:6, we read it. It says, train up a child in the way he should go, or they should go. And when they grow old, they will not depart from it. If we're not training our children up in the way that they should go, then we are failing. We're failing them, and we're failing to obey the command that God has given us. Because it's a command to train up a child. Not let someone else do it, not when it's convenient or when I have time, but it's a command to train up the child. Whether you're a parent, whether you're a teacher, whether you're a friend, whether you're a mentor, we have a responsibility as Christians to make sure we're training that next generation. So what are we doing to make sure that we're doing this? Let's close in prayer.